This is The Takeaway. I'm Sarah Gonzalez. I'm one of the hosts of NPR's Planet Money podcast, and I'm in for Tanzina Vega all week, broadcasting from LA. We want to start with a heads up to our listeners. This next conversation will include a discussion of suicide. This week, researchers published a study in the journal Nature Medicine that could have major implications for how post-traumatic stress disorder is treated going forward. Their work examined the role that MDMA, which is found in the drugs ecstasy or Molly, can play in treating people with PTSD. Conducted with 90 participants, including veterans, first responders, and sexual assault survivors, the study found that around 67% of those who were given doses of MDMA were no longer diagnosable with PTSD 2 months after treatment. That's compared to 32% of those who were given a placebo. Now, the study says that MDMA needs to be given alongside talk therapy in order to be effective. And many experts are hoping that this eventually leads the FDA to approve MDMA for wider therapeutic authorization. But despite the excitement surrounding the new study, it has some shortcomings. Around 75% of the participants in the research were white, meaning we still don't know the role MDMA can play in treating PTSD for people of color. For more, I'm joined by retired Sergeant John Lebecki, Veterans and Government Affairs Liaison for the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, or MAPS. MAPS was one of the groups involved in the recent MDMA study. John, it's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me on.
Also with us is Dr. Albert Garcia Romeo, Assistant Professor and Psychopharmacology Researcher at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Albert, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
John, you served in Iraq, returned to the United States in 2006. Then in 2014, you took part in phase two of this MDMA trial. What was the actual treatment process like?
So the treatment process, it's not like a traditional when we think of a therapy where you go to an office and you get a 50-minute therapy hour. And just when you're about to open up about something, therapist's like, that's all the time we have for today. We'll take it up next week. This is a long process. It takes approximately 4 months to go through the full protocol. You start with three, we call them integration sessions, which are 90-minute regular therapy sessions to kind of figure out a baseline and talk a little bit about what your traumas are and things like that, so that when you're under the influence, the therapists, the two specially trained therapists, have an idea where to go and where to start. You then do a 8-hour therapy session under the influence of MDMA, or basically as long as the MDMA is in your system. But you do take a booster dose 2 hours in, which doesn't make you higher. It just extends that therapeutic range so that you can get more therapy in. And then you do three 90-minute integration sessions spaced out over the next month to deal with everything that comes up in that therapy. And then you do it again, and you do three active sessions with MDMA. And as you said, 32% showed improvement on placebo. Part of that is because this protocol allows an individual, even without taking the MDMA, to sit down with two therapists for 8 hours and just talk. And that has shown, that in and of itself has shown to help. You add the MDMA on top of it, and you see the numbers that you have of 67% after 2 months. The trial I was in, which had, I believe, 127 total people, it was 56% after 2 months, and it rose up to 68% at the 12-month mark. I happen to fall into that category where I was healed towards the end of that 12 months, because there's continued healing, even without taking the medication.
So the therapy is occurring while you're on a dose of MDMA. Do you talk about the trauma you experience during these therapy sessions, or is it a more broad kind of therapy session?
You talk about all, honestly, you talk about all the traumas in your life. For me, you know, the most significant one that I saw as an impact on my life was from my time in Iraq. But I was also abused by my mother growing up. And went through some different abusive environments. my coming home from Iraq, plane landed and literally no one left the plane. My wife had moved in with Lieutenant Colonel. So I had a lot of trauma. I talked about all of it. I went in and I talked about all the trauma in my life, even though my intent was to just talk about Iraq.
And what did you feel like when you had these sessions, particularly when you had, MDMA in your system? What did it feel like?
It's like doing therapy while being hugged by everyone in the world who loves you in a bathtub full of puppies licking your face.
Wow, that's quite the sell.
And here's the thing, and this is one thing I do want to be clear. This isn't like taking this and going to a rave or a party. It is a lot of hard work. You are reliving and talking about the absolute worst moments of your life that were so significant and traumatic they could change your brain chemistry. So it's not fun, but it's not overly traumatic, like, say, prolonged exposure therapy, which is kind of like beating on a nerve until it doesn't feel anymore. You have to work through everything, and that is not comfortable. It is not fun, but it is possible with the MDMA because you don't have panic attacks. You can stay in a therapeutic range and not shut off emotions or be over emotional. And then you can actually get into the work of the therapy. The therapy is what fixes it. The MDMA puts the mind, body, and spirit in the place it needs to be for that actual therapy to work.
Albert, the researchers who published this new study, they say that MDMA-assisted therapy represents a potential breakthrough treatment. You're a professor of psychopharmacology. Why is it that the combination of these two things might be more effective than other PTSD treatments?
Well, there's a way that this drug can help facilitate the therapeutic process by, as Sergeant Lubecki mentioned, sort of turning down some of the knee-jerk fear response that's very common when talking about past trauma, and it allows access to some of those very difficult experiences, and also allows access to emotions that usually we keep kind of behind a wall, if you will, to keep us protected. And so that facilitates the therapeutic process by using these drug-assisted treatment sessions to let people feel safe, and build the rapport with their therapists, and also face some of these extremely challenging experiences from their past in a setting that helps them to feel as though it's a little bit more manageable. And so that is one of the things that's extremely innovative about this type of treatment, which is that it's combining both the talk therapy with these drug-assisted sessions.
And what are the other types of PTSD treatments like?
Well, there's a few other treatments. Some just include use of medications such as SSRIs, for instance, where people would take those daily for several months or longer. And the idea would be that hopefully that sort of turns down some of those symptoms of anxiety, flashbacks, negative mood. But they only work for some people. They don't work well for everyone. And I think importantly, they don't necessarily address much of the underlying issues that are there. It just kind of tries to cover them over. Whereas with this MDMA-assisted treatment, you're able to sort of more effectively work with that traumatic material and then process it, which is ultimately the goal in talk therapy, or as Sergeant Lubecki had mentioned, prolonged exposure therapy, which is a type of talk therapy where people go to talk about their past trauma, but because that can be highly unpleasant, many people just don't like to do that and aren't unable to really sit with that process for an extended period, which means that a lot of people just don't do that work, and then they aren't able to get better. And so by combining the MDMA with the talk therapy, you're able to get a little bit more of those safe feelings when you're confronting that material, and then helping to process that a little better.
John, will you talk to us about what your mental health was like prior to participating in this trial? How long had you lived with PTSD before?
So I lived with horrific PTSD for 8 years before I went through the trial. And so what's funny is I always thought I hit it well until I was healed, and all my friends were like, no, dude, we all were terrified. I had 5 suicide attempts, and I've been hospitalized. I didn't sleep through the night for 8 years. I had a service dog, and it was everything I could do to simply exist. I couldn't live. And one of the issues that and the doc can probably back me up on this, a lot of the PTSD treatments require, especially the pharmacological ones, they work if you're on them and they don't when you're not. So I actually used cannabis for 5 years to keep me on the living side of suicide attempts. And I didn't have any. And then when I stopped and went back on the 42 pills a day the VA had me on, within 11 months, I had my fifth and final suicide attempt. So, and I was classified as having severe. But there's also people, PTSD is a spectrum. For some people, mindfulness, yoga, going to church or going to the gym is all they need. Other people, a Zoloft a day keeps the demons away. Some people use cannabis. There's hyperbaric chamber therapy, subganglial blocks, and as well as MDMA and other psychedelics. If we want to abate the PTSD and suicide epidemic in this country, then we need to have every option and every tool on the table.
Well, John, I'm so glad that you're still with us and you're doing feeling better. Albert, you are at Johns Hopkins. It's not actually easy for researchers to study psychedelics and how psychedelics can treat certain mental health conditions. Why is this a difficult thing to study?
The main thing is these are Schedule I substances, meaning they're the most highly restricted drugs, period. And so in order to get all of the necessary approvals to do that, it takes months and months. And you need doctors, pharmacists, you need regulatory specialists, because there are hoops to jump through groups like the FDA, the DEA. You have to acquire the drug, which can be time consuming and expensive just to find a way to get that legally. So all of those things make it very difficult, expensive, and complicated to be able to do research with these Schedule I drugs.
And how risky is MDMA compared to, say, pharmaceutical drugs meant to treat things like PTSD? Maybe how addictive are they compared to pharmaceutical drugs?
I mean, it depends. There's lots of different types of pharmaceutical drugs, obviously. Things like opioids can be highly addictive, yet they're used pretty regularly and prescribed on a daily basis. And then there are also the types of SSRIs or other medications that can be used in treating post-traumatic stress or some of the related conditions. The SSRIs in and of themselves can lead to withdrawal syndromes, where people, when they get off of them, start to feel some problems and low mood. Really, I would say the benzodiazepines that are used to treat some of the related anxiety symptoms are more addictive and problematic. And it's something that is not talked about enough because they're pretty commonly prescribed. The MDMA itself, especially in the context of this type of treatment, where there are only three doses. So this is not something where people are given a script and taking this home and taking it every day. This is something where in the course of a 3 or 4 month therapeutic process, they come in for supervised sessions, dosing on site with trained professionals who are monitoring about 3 days during that 3 month period. And in that context, this drug is incredibly safe. You actually don't see a whole lot of problems in terms of, health risks or outside drug seeking, because generally speaking, when people are using these in this type of therapeutic setting, then that's kind of how they associate its use, as opposed to, recreational use, which can sometimes lead to some problems.
John, it's been 6 years since you last took MDMA. Was there ever something like a come down?
It's kind of funny. I equate it a lot like my back surgery. The pain when I had my back surgery went down so much that I actually only took painkillers for 24 hours because I was in so the depression come down that you hear about MDMA, the reduction in my underlying depression was so great that the added depression by the serotonin depletion was negligible. But also, I think we need to stop looking at things like pharmaceuticals and MDMA. MDMA is a pharmaceutical. It was designed and manufactured prior to its being banned as a pharmaceutical. And as the doc said, there's a lot of pharmaceuticals that are really, really bad. I think we need to start looking at these substances as good for the purpose that they're being used or bad for the purpose they're being used for. But also, there's a bigger picture here in relation to stigma. The entire time that I had PTSD, even before I had it, I was told this is a chronic, lifelong mental illness that once acquired, this is your new normal. We can manage and mitigate symptoms, but this is it. Which leads people to lose hope. I did 5 times and I tried to end my life. If we can heal 67% of people of PTSD in 4 months, it is a mental injury and not a chronic illness, and it can be healed like a broken bone. But as far as the drug-seeking behavior, you go, as I said before, you go through a lot of traumatic things. It's kind of like a colonoscopy. You go in, you have specially trained people, you have really powerful drugs to knock you out that they're not going to let you take home. But it's a necessary thing. It's not fun. It's uncomfortable. Although you may get some pleasurable feelings from the actual medication, the rest of it really, really sucks. And so it's not like the next day you wake up and you're like, wow, that anesthesia was great. I'm going to go schedule another colonoscopy. And so because you only do it 3 times, I haven't done MDMA since the trial. I had, and honestly, I don't use a lot of drugs. I've done an ayahuasca ceremony because I was invited and wanted to experience it with the church. And I use cannabis for pain control because I hate opiates.
Albert, are there concerns that before a drug like MDMA is officially approved for medical use, people dealing with mental health issues might seek it out on their own without professional help?
Well, I mean, people have been using MDMA for years and years. So I'm not sure how different that's going to be as a result of this research. And MAPS has actually been doing work in this area also for at least a decade, if not longer. So this is not exactly new, but what is new is the fact that the phase 3 data, which is a very large and robust trial, has shown this efficacy. And that's really what's moving it towards the medical approval stage. I do think that when people see this type of media and they're struggling and they're not getting the help that they're wanting through traditional treatments right now, then it certainly begs a question of, what are they going to do if they are feeling like they don't have any other options, that there is a possibility they'll seek this out outside of the approved medical settings. But that's because at the moment, this is not available except for, through these clinical trials. So that really puts people between a rock and a hard place. And I understand that when you're struggling with these mental health symptoms, as we've heard, it can be literally a matter of life or death.
Dr. Albert Garcia Romeo is an assistant professor of psychopharmacology research at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, and retired Sergeant John Lebecki is the Veterans and Government Affairs Liaison for MAPS. Thank you both for joining us, and John, thank you for sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you or someone you know is having suicidal thoughts, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-TALK.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.